Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into the Vietnam Holding Investment Trust. For this podcast, we're going to be looking particularly closely at the portfolio companies. We're going to be looking at three companies. And to do this, we're very kindly joined by Craig Martin, who is the chairman of Dynam Capital, the manager of the Vietnam Holding Investment Trust. Craig, very much welcome you back to the podcast.
It's great to be back, Jonathan.
So, as I mentioned, we have three companies that we're going to be spending most of the time today on. But before we do that, Craig, we always get fantastic insights from you in terms of the economic picture in Vietnam and how the macroeconomic environment is influencing things over there. So it would be good to get just a brief update of where we are, how the equity markets are performing at the moment.
Well, that's right. There's two stories there, really, isn't there? One is the kind of the macro and the economic picture, which, despite the gloominess and the worries we see in the world, actually in Vietnam, it's still very attractive and strong macro. In fact, this year we've had record levels of foreign direct investment. So that's people looking to use Vietnam as a base for manufacturing globally, made in Vietnam. So that foreign direct investment coming in is at record levels. And then secondly, linked into that kind of trade position that Vietnam's in, this very open economy, it's had a record trade surplus. So despite weakness and global demand being a bit soft through much of the year, Vietnam, in terms of those two pillars, has done very well. In terms of the equity market, it's a much more volatile picture. And I think, investors need to bear in mind that Vietnam's still it's an emerging market. Technically, it's still a frontier market. But it's also very much driven by domestic retail investors, 6 million retail investors. And they react both to global news, what the Fed's doing on interest rates, as well as local news. So there is a lot of volatility. And the market was down quite a bit last month. It's up the first 2 days of this month. But through that, very pleased to say that Vietnam Holding, a Vietnam-focused investment opportunity, has continued to outperform. And we outperform when the market's up and we outperform when the market's down. And we've been doing that now with a track record, 1, 3, 5, 10 years of outperformance. So, we believe strongly on the opportunity, and that's supported by the strong macro. But you've got to both be nimble and patient, because the markets can be very volatile.
Indeed. Just looking here, Vietnam Holding up about 7% year to date, slightly off the highs, but that's to be understandable in the current environment. So what we're going to do now, Craig, is we're going to drill down into a number of the portfolio companies here and really explore what they're doing on the ground in Vietnam and where the value is for investors. So we're going to start off with a company, FPT Corporation, which, Craig, I believe is the biggest holding in the portfolio at the moment. And it really plays in to the digitalization element and thesis that you have within the portfolio. So would you be able to give us a bit of an introduction to that company, please, and why you're invested in it?
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. Look, FPT, we've been a highly convicted investor, a high level of conviction, I should say, as an investor for a number of years. And it remains our number one position, about 15% of the fund. FPT is a business that, as you say, is a digital champion. It's been a domestic digital champion in terms of helping Vietnamese companies digitalize. And, it's everything from their kind of business internet services, their broadband, as well as software systems and cloud services. It's also been a significant exporter of software engineering broadly to big Japanese companies and corporates and big US corporates as well. And then thirdly, it's a big educator, particularly in science, technology, engineering and maths. It's got school programs and university programs covering about 120,000 students. And in Vietnam, interestingly, about 40% of the graduates in Vietnam are STEM, that's science, technology, engineering, and maths. And that's about three times the level, you know, perhaps in the US. I'm not sure what it is in the UK. So it's got these pillars which have been doing really, really well for a number of years. And the business has been kind of compounding its performance at a high clip. So it's kind of growth in top lines, 20, 25%. Growth in bottom line is about 20 to 25%. Its return on invested capital over a decade is close to 25%. And then to add to it, there are very two interesting new themes that are developing that we're keeping a very close eye on. One is to do with semiconductors. Now, Joe Biden visited Vietnam last month and really was delighted to have Vietnam lift America's status to comprehensive strategic partner, which is what Vietnam has with China, with South Korea, also with Russia. And so US is now at that same level. And on the tail of that, there was a lot of talk about the US's aim of managing its semiconductor global industry. If you're aware, obviously, the US outsourced most of this 30, 40 years ago to Taiwan and relying on many parts of Asia to produce its semiconductors. And under the CHIP Act, it's trying to bring a lot of that back onshore, but can't bring everything onshore realistically. So there's opportunities in Vietnam and there's opportunities for FPT in a number of areas. One is not so much in fabricating semiconductors. That's a massive investment of $20 to $30 billion, but rather in assembly and test and packaging of semiconductors. And that's something that people like Intel have been doing already for a decade in Vietnam. But also in the design for the fabrications, not just digital, but also analog integrated circuits for kind of power control, that kind of thing. So FPT is doing that. The other thing that FPT is doing is obviously training engineers for the semiconductor supply chain. And then the other key angle, and this is relatively new as well, is the development of AI. Now, obviously, everyone's talking about artificial intelligence or AI in the last year since ChatGPT brought AI into people's smartphones and desktops and into their houses. And actually, FPT has been developing work on artificial intelligence since early last year, looking at computer vision solutions for the auto industry. And they've been working with a very interesting company called Landing AI, which is set up by Andrew Ng. Andrew Ng, originally from Singapore, but a leader, a world leader, a guru, perhaps, in AI. So FPT is working with Landing AI to develop curriculum, to train students in Vietnam, to train the next future set of engineers that will be very AI savvy. So it's around developing the software in terms of the human capital, as well as the capabilities for software in the traditional sense of engineering solutions, both for Vietnamese corporates as well as global corporates. So FPT, tremendous business, good margins, great growth, and is really both that domestic IT champion for Vietnam, and Vietnam is a digitally savvy nation. E-commerce is growing about 30, 40%. So there's tremendous domestic opportunity in Vietnam, but also Vietnam exporting software as a service globally. So there's a number of dimensions to FPT, and we think it's a great business, high quality business, good governance, and you know, we're delighted to have it as our highest conviction in the Vietnam holding portfolio.
So Craig, I've just got a question on the approach to FPT, because I mean, looking back, and this is nearly 2 years ago now, back to January of last year, and look at the holding within the portfolio then, it accounted for about 8 or 9% of the portfolio. That shot up to 15% most recently. Is that a result of the share price increasing and growing within it, or have you been adding to that over the past 18 months, 2 years?
It's really through that the growth, the share price growth. Actually, for Vietnam Holding, we can't invest more than 10% at the time of investment into a company. The fact that this is 15% is because it's grown beyond that because of the underlying growth in the company. So quality discussion we always have is, you know, 15%, that's quite a lot. Do we take some profit? Historically, we have, and then it's grown again. This is a compounding business. So I say it's a quality problem to have. So no, we haven't been adding to it much in the last couple of years, but the position has grown significantly.
Yeah, thank you. Just looking at their most recent financial statements, very good growth in revenue and also EPS there. We're going to move on now, Craig, and look at PVS. So this is a company that's operating in energy services, and it is probably one of the most weighted in the portfolio towards net zero 2050 goals. So could you give us an outline of that business as well as some of the projects that they're working on at the moment, please?
Yeah, look, it's a very interesting company. So PetroVietnam Technical Services, the ticker is PVS, is an energy transition play. And itself, it's a company in transition. So historically, it's been a key player in the offshore supply sector for the oil and gas industry. So it's had a number of specialized offshore support vessels and offshore floating oil storage vessels and the anchor handling tugs, these very expensive vessels used in the oil and gas industry. And where it's pivoting is using that fleet of about 18 specialized vessels to install and maintain wind farms, offshore wind farms, not just in Vietnam, but in Taiwan, in Vietnam, both offshore and onshore wind farms, and in other European countries as well. So as you mentioned, that's, you know, Vietnam at COP26 in Glasgow committed to net zero by 2050. And on the back of that, Vietnamese government, in terms of their energy plan for the country, have really looked to move away over time from coal, which is a key part of the current energy mix, and from oil, to use LNG, gas in the medium term and longer term, to really develop more of the wind and solar renewable energy. And so PVS is really well positioned in the wind energy business. Now, wind is very technical, and particularly when you're looking at near shore, so that's near to the coastline, and then deep sea or offshore, that's a very harsh environment, and deep seas naturally. And so you need a lot of vessels to install, erect the wind towers, and the cabling and maintain them. So that's an interesting transition. The other very interesting project that PVS is looking at, well, there's two. One is linked into gas, which is going to, as I mentioned, going to be that kind of intermediate bulk energy source also for Vietnam. But in terms of renewable energy, Vietnam's got tremendous wind potential for the region. And by that, I mean for Southeast Asia. And Singapore, which is a very developed country but has very little in the way of natural resource, is looking to work with PVS, with our portfolio company, to do two things. One, to import renewable energy, to import wind energy, and to import maybe 10% of Singapore's energy demand from Vietnam through an undersea cable. So this is going to be one of the longest undersea power cables in the world, about 1,000 kilometers. And so PVS will be involved in not only laying that cable alongside the Singapore company, but also then enabling and powering Singapore through wind energy that Vietnam develops. Now, that's obviously a longer term project, but in the shorter term, it's got wind projects in Vietnam and then in the region to work on. So it's got a massive order book. One of our challenges as stock analysts is to kind of understand, does it have all the capability to deliver on that, and how does it expand its capability? But again, that's a quality problem. So it's got a massive order book for projects as it transitions from being a kind of an oil and gas company through to a renewable energy company. Now, Jonathan, it's worth pointing out that for Vietnam Holding, we've been, at the forefront of responsible investing and ESG investing for a long time. And one of our investors in the UK, who's also very committed to responsible investing, called us when they saw in our publicly announced fact sheet earlier in the year that we started to invest in in this company saying, oh, look, you know, can you tell us a little bit more? Because when we screen it, it looks like an oil and gas company. And isn't that against what you've been saying as kind of like a responsible investor and an ESG investor? And so we pointed out that, no, it's a company in transition. What it means for our portfolio is interesting. So we measure our carbon footprint and we compare that to the Vietnam index. Now, on average, over the last 3 years, we've been 30, 40% lower carbon footprint than the index, which is a good thing. But the year just gone, we're actually slightly higher than the index. And that's because we've backed this company in transition. So it's still kind of categorized as oil and gas and therefore with a higher carbon footprint, but actually over the longer term, it's going to be an emerging market renewable energy champion. So Vietnam, but also to the broader emerging Asian markets and even the developed markets like Singapore. So one to watch, one to keep an eye on. We think it's a business that's got good growth. And next year, we're looking at earnings per share growth kind of north of 30%. So that, you know, will hopefully support what we see as our overall portfolio growth of maybe 20% in 2024.
Yeah, certainly some interesting projects there, and especially that cable. I mean, that's a major piece of infrastructure that's going to be powering Singapore with green power for some years to come. So that's a really interesting development. But just have some questions on the wind power element, because it seems as though they're really going 100 miles an hour for the wind power side of things. With the orders that you mentioned there, Craig, it looks like they have a lot of work for some time to come. But just looking, it's quite timely, actually, that we're talking about wind power, because we looked yesterday, we had news from the world's largest developer of wind power, Ørsted, that they were scrapping two projects over in the United States. You know, when you see news like that, of course, it's in a completely different geography. I mean, what are your feelings around that? Does that give you any concerns about wind power in Vietnam? Or do you just look and think this is two completely different jurisdictions? And, you know, what's happening over there with the economy and the costings is just a completely different situation than what we're seeing in Vietnam at the moment.
Yeah, look, firstly, you mentioned 100 miles per hour. Hopefully that's not the wind. You want good wind, but not that high. You have to, the turrets explode at that speed. Look, I think it's an interesting point. Wind is a very difficult energy resource to harness. Obviously, the wind blows and it's free, that's fine. But actually, to install and erect a wind farm is a very complicated undertaking. In fact, solar is much easier. To do a solar farm, you need three things. You need a cloth to clean the solar panels. You need in Asia, you need a dog to go and chase the people off who are trying to cut and steal the copper cable. And you need a whistle. The whistle's to call the dog back. So solar's very easy. Wind is very complicated in all markets. So sometimes projects, you know, get cancelled, get delayed. And, you know, even for Vietnam, it's looking at 4 or 5 gigawatts of wind potential. And it will take a lot of time and a lot of money to develop that fully. So I don't think the case you mentioned is relevant specifically to Vietnam. But I think it does just show that, you know, renewable energy is perhaps not as easy as people think. And that's why you need very specialized subcontractors and service and supply companies, because the components to some of these wind farms are massive. The towers are huge, the blades are incredibly long, and the logistics involved in siting them onshore, you know, is very difficult, nearshore, and then in deep sea can be a great challenge. So actually that complexity plays well to someone like PVS, because they're experienced and qualified in dealing with very complicated, you know, oil and gas projects that can also go wrong. And so they can bring that skill set and the level of quality and service to what they're doing in renewable energy. So, you know, they don't need to get every wind project in the world. They don't even need to get every wind project in Southeast Asia. But there will be a significant player, I suspect, in Southeast Asia in wind energy.
Thank you. So we're going to move on now to the last company that we're going to discuss today. And you mentioned at the beginning, Craig, that Vietnam are seeing a significant trade surplus at the moment. Now, of course, a facilitator of this trade surplus is freight and transportation and logistics. And the foreign companies, Germadept, which is an operator of seaports and air cargo, are they seeing a big uptick in their activity as Vietnam becomes more of a manufacturing hub for companies around the world?
Look, on the longer term, yes. This year has actually been a very challenging year globally, of course, for trade. And, you know, Vietnam's generated that trade surplus, a record trade surplus, but actually on lower exports than perhaps in previous years in terms of growth. But those exports have been higher than imports, which is why they have a surplus. So for Germadept, the core business, which, as you mentioned, has been in a number of ports across the country, it's been a challenging year. They've seen their port throughput in the early part of this year, the first half of the year, down by about 20%. And that's, you know, people were consuming less in the US and Europe, and there are all the concerns globally. We're starting to see some signs that that's picking up. You know, orders perhaps ahead of the kind of festive season in the US and North America driving exports. And as you rightly say, Germadept is not only a key logistics champion in sea cargo, it also has a big stake in one of the two suppliers of air cargo in Vietnam. So I think the underlying business this year has been soft, but for Germadept this year, we've seen a massive increase in profit, actually through one-off gains. It divested one of its older ports very profitably and managed to divert its customer base to a new port that it had been building, and so it could get the utilization rates up relatively quickly. So it's been quite clever managing its portfolio, despite the difficulties this year. But we think its core business for next year could be well back on track. Again, that's partly, you know, Vietnam is really positioning itself as a key part of the global supply chain. There are many more items now with the kind of made in Vietnam item. Vietnam is also a big exporter of raw material, rice, coffee, rubber, kind of at that one end of the kind of commodity side through to manufactured goods. And that there's a lot of electronic goods that Vietnam exports, high-tech goods. Samsung generates something like $60 billion of value out of Vietnam alone. So, you know, that needs to, the components need to be shipped in, and that's where Germadept can have a role. And then the finished goods need to be shipped out, and that's where port operators like Germadept can also have a role to play. And we think there's a good chance next year that they'll see increased rates for the services that they provide at the ports. So we think they'll get better throughput, better volume, perhaps better unit pricing on their core business next year as well. So we're quietly confident that the Germadept also is a business that has good growth prospects for 2024. And the core profit earnings per share could be 30 to almost 50% in a couple of our scenarios. So we think it's a good growth at a very reasonable price. Its price earnings is about eight times, so single digit price earnings for a growth that we think is going to be quite significant next year.
Yeah, certainly eight times earnings. That does look very, very good value. So to finish off, Craig, I think listeners would like to get some insight into your thinking on the portfolio there. We've outlined three portfolio companies there. Some done very well recently, but it'd be good to get some insight into what your thinking is going forward in terms of positioning within the portfolio. You mentioned that there's a lot of volatility in Vietnamese equities at the moment. So are you happy with the composition of the portfolio as it is? Are you going to be sitting with these stocks, or are you actually looking out there in the market at the moment, seeing this volatility, and do you have your eye on potential companies that you're going to be adding to the portfolio in the coming months?
Well, look, we're a long-term investor, but we're also very nimble and active. So we're not the index. We have a high active weight. And we do, you know, regularly, daily, we're looking at the portfolio and, you know, updating our models as we see new information. And we're always prepared to change our positions based on new information and either, you know, giving us greater conviction on our holdings or in some instances, of course, you know, changing our convictions. And also we have to be tactical as well around the portfolio. So, you know, we'll see how the rest of the year develops, but we are looking at a portfolio that we think can have good growth through in 2024. We've got a couple of interesting new names that we're working on and adding slowly to the portfolio. And we think there are some sectors that could see good growth next year. We're also interested in some of the retail areas, perhaps rebounding from a soft 2023. So that could be benefiting our names such as our jewelry business, P&J, Mobile World, which we still have in the portfolio, but it's not in our top 10 anymore. And also a couple of other names in the retail space. So, you know, you've got to be vigilant. You've got to be nimble. You've got to be active. And you have to be on the ground. So our team are on the ground, actively looking at the opportunities. And, you know, we do rebalance the portfolio depending on which way the wind's blowing. But we take that longer term perspective around, you know, the fundamentals, good growth, look through the noise and look at reasonable valuations as well. But also good management teams and businesses that are on the right track in terms of their reporting and their corporate governance as well. That's very important to us. So we look for either warning signs around that or we look for evidence that our conviction is paying off. And for some of those businesses, we may well add to those as well. So we don't want to do everything. And again, we're managing a fairly concentrated portfolio. Our top 10 is about, you know, 60 to 65% of the portfolio. And we've got typically 25, 26 names in the portfolio. So it's a good size to manage. And our performance has been very good. You know, our year to date, we're outperforming the market, we're outperforming our peers, and very nicely we received an award just yesterday, the Citywire Award for Best Emerging Market Single Country Fund. So it's good that our, you know, 3, 4, 5 year performance is being recognized, and we want to do more.
Congratulations on the awards, Craig. I think that's really a reflection of what the share price and the work that the team have done there over the past few years, looking at how these shares have moved since then. Just want to give a note to listeners. If you do check out the notes to this podcast, there'll be a link through to the Vietnam Holding Library, where you'll be able to download the most recent annual report, which came out in the last couple of weeks. So do check that out. Do download that. If you're able to get more information on the portfolio companies discussed today, as well as the rest of the portfolio there. So that's a link in the notes to this podcast. So do check that out. So Craig, thank you very much for being with us today.
Jonathan, my pleasure as always. Thank you.
And very much looking forward to having you back in the not too distant future. And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.